I speak to you in the name of one God, creator, redeemer, and sustainer. Amen. So for those of you who were last week, you can believe your bulletin this week. I am actually preaching. I don't know if you have heard the story that the LA Times has been running for the past week, but it made the news much earlier that movie and television star Steve Carell, in the aftermath of the fire, made sure that all of the Pasadena schools were able to have their prom this year. He paid for a ticket for every student and their date who is eligible to go. Now, once the news got out that prom was on, the other groups came in and they provided new and vintage, I guess that's the thing now, vintage prom dresses. Mine would be vintage. Suits and jackets and makeup and shoes and undergarment and jewelry. I mean, the works, hairdo, it was all out. And they were doing everything they could to bring this rite of passage to this group who had lost so much. And prom isn't just about the rite of passage of juniors and really seniors, but prom is very much about the sartorial decisions that one makes as one walks into the room. And if you are on social media right now, it is flooded with prom photos from across the United States. And I admit, I love this little mini season because I like to see what they're wearing in the South versus what they're wearing in the Northeast, and where is it a trend to have corsages or nosegays or the whole, I'm sorry, I do get into it. I don't even like fashion. But what is interesting is that as I read through the bios of the students' features, of the students who were featured, the vast majority of them had lost their home. One had bought her dress her sophomore year and had lost it in the fire. And they were so excited to just be in a room together with all of their friends, but part of that was also looking their best. In the aftermath of desolation, they could go in there looking like $1 million. And I bring up Steve Carell's gift and what came flowed out of that, because in a way it points to how clothing is so essential in our lives. We walk down the street and we read a person based on what they are wearing. And definitely part of prom, half of the fun, or in some of our cases, half of the pain, is figuring out what you're gonna wear. But it says something about the importance of this rite of passage, that there is a certain look that goes with it. Now, I'll admit, formal wear is not necessary clothing per se, but clothing is necessary and essential in our lives. You want to get noticed by the police, just walk outdoors without any clothes on. I promise you, you will get a response. And not only that, we live in the age of what is called fast fashion. Old Navy, Target, Temu, Amazon. Our closets, our dressers are filled, and probably even some of us overfilled. We don't think twice about picking up whatever I need, wherever I'm going, if I need it along the way. But in the time of Jesus, this is not how clothing functioned. In the time of the disciples, with those who followed Jesus, there was no such thing as fast fashion. You generally had one article of clothing, maybe likely a second as a cloak for winter. And when you have one article of clothing, you take an immense amount of time to care for it, to wash it, to mend it, to make sure that you can go out wearing it, even then, and look presentable. And you would wear this one article of clothing until it was so threadbare or ripped or torn or unusable that you were forced to go spend money on a new outfit, a new article to wear. And that's where we turn to the story of Tabitha Dorcas today, a story that to me speaks as much as how we are to follow Jesus as it speaks to what resurrection is. The story of Tabitha, also known as Dorcas, that we hear from the book of Acts today, is incredibly, incredibly rich with detail. I'm going to start right off the bat. She has two names, and not like some people, one name before they knew Jesus and then another name after they knew Jesus. Looking at you, Simon Peter and Saul Paul. No, Dorcas, she had two names from the get-go. And why? Because she was a respected woman. She lived in a city that likely, well, that did have different Jewish populations, those that spoke Aramaic and those that spoke Greek, and much like, I don't know, Christian sects that don't always get along so well with each other, these did not. And yet she clearly, known by both names, had a presence in both of those communities. She lived in a diaspora, and she likely had a foot in each community, and not only was in them, but respected, called by name on them. And I think we all understand the challenge of trying to be accepted in opposing communities, do we not, in this day and age? We also know that Tabitha, and I'm going to go with Tabitha, her name was also Dorcas in Greek, but I'm going with Tabitha today to make it easier for us. She is the only woman in the New Testament named as a disciple. Now, many women are named as followers of Jesus. We know many who followed him and technically should be called disciples. But Tabitha is the only one where that specific Greek word is used. Why? We aren't told exactly, but the next line about her says she was devoted to good works and acts of charity. Devoted to good works and acts of charity. There are further clues about Tabitha. There were clues that she was likely a woman of means. And that is not why she was named as a disciple. It doesn't work that way. But we know this because when she dies, they bathe her body and they take her to an upper room in her own home. And only homes of wealthy would have had such an upper room. But here's the detail of this story that I almost love the most. When she dies, those who are there, they don't go and raid her house to get what they can. No, they take her body and they wash it and they lay it upstairs and they gather around her weeping. And when Peter arrives, he finds them weeping. But then in the midst of their weeping, they show him the garments that she has made them. The garments that widows so easily cannot acquire in that day and age. Because this detail speaks to who Tabitha was as a disciple. Widows often, not always, but often depended on care from the wider community. And Tabitha used her means and her skill as a cloth maker to not just care for widows, but to clothe them. She gave them the gift that they needed, not the gift that she was done with and was willing to give off to someone who might be in need. She gave a gift that allowed widows to walk out into the wider population and to be respected. And I don't know if you're like me, you grew up with a mother who liked to make your clothes. Making clothes for someone can get a little bit intimate, right? They're all in there with their measuring tape, oh yeah, right? To make clothes for someone, they have to trust you. They have to trust you so that you can give them what they need. Tabitha saw a need and knew that she had the gift to address it. But what is more, Tabitha saw the people who were in need, these women who were in need, and she built relationship with them. She built relationship so that they not only got a piece of clothing, but they came to know the love of God. When Peter arrives and the widows are demonstrating everything to him and crying, he chases everyone out and kneels and prays. And then our gospel says that he tells the body to stand up. It's a lousy translation, by the way. The better translation would be arise. What he tells the body to do is to arise. It is a word that is used over 100 times in our New Testament. It is a word that implies both action and belief. Peter looks at her and says, arise. And Tabitha opens her eyes and she sits up, and Peter puts out his hand to help her. And I would be remiss if I did not point out again the lesson that we keep hearing in this Easter season. We are disciples together. We are followers of Jesus together. We live out our faith not in isolation, but together. And I can guarantee you, Tabitha Dorcas, a woman of her own means, who I am sure could do it on her own, could have arisen off of that bed by herself. But no, she takes Peter's hand, and together they find the resurrected life. Tabitha gives us the example of discipleship for us to follow. And so I question us today. I challenge us to find the places that we in our own lives are devoted to good works and acts of charity. I don't mean just giving what we can or what we want, but intentionally, faithfully, in our relationship with God, because we believe in a living God, where are we seeing a need and addressing it? Such as those who helped the fire victims get to their high school rite of passage and have a moment of joy in the midst of desolation. How is it that you and I can take time to get to know people so that we can find out what they actually need rather than what we think they need and be able to serve them and share the love of God with them? Where are we willing to be like Tabitha and to heed God's call to live into the resurrected life and to arise through our faith and turn our belief into action and to extend God's love to others? So coming up, whether you are Rise Against Hunger this coming Saturday, if you are, make community. Know the people who you are working with. Introduce yourself to someone you don't know. Get to know what their need is. Listen. When you go next to Laundry Love to wash clothes that are precious to people who do not have fashion in their lives, take time to have a conversation. Know the people that you are serving. Listen to what their needs are. When you feed people at Neighbor to Neighbor, and you give them that food that is going to nourish their bodies, also give them the gift of knowing their name and dignity. And also in our neighborhood, as we go out and be St. Cross, I pray that we will be like Tabitha, that we will understand that good works happen in community, with community, and when we are doing works of God's love together, like Peter and Tabitha, we will find the risen Lord. Amen.